We were told on one occasion that we are of very advanced years and did not have long left for this world. In a nice way. On my birthday, our African host thanked God that I had made it to 66 and prayed that I would make it to 67. Conditions there are very hard, and life expectancy is 55 for men and even lower for women, so we would seem ancient to them. My name is Roger Batchelor, and this is my wife Jackie. We live in Ifield and worship at Christ the Lord Church in Broadfield. I retired in April 2011, but still do bank work as a porter at Crawley Hospital when required. And Jackie retired from teaching at Christmas last year. We went to Nakuru in Kenya for 3 months in February this year to work at Nakuru Mission in any way that would help. It's really quite difficult to put our experiences into words. We experienced a roller coaster of emotions. Every day we laughed and every day we cried. When Jim suggested we talk for 45 minutes, we wondered what we could talk about for so long. But we have found it hard to decide what to put in and what to leave out. Life in Kenya is very different from England, as you would expect. There is the heat, the hustle and bustle, but mostly the difference is in the expectations of the people. If a family has enough money to pay the rent, buy food and pay for education, they are very content, although in our experience there weren't many people who could afford such luxury. So life is very difficult for them. Their faith is very important to them, and it seemed that everyone went to church at some time during a Sunday. There were churches on every corner, and the worship could be heard as we walked along the road.
We talked about volunteering for many years, and our hearts had gone out to the children that you see on TV appeals, and we wanted to do something practical to help. As retirement was looming, we decided the time had come to stop talking about it and do something. We're very thankful for our healthy children and grandchildren, and we asked God what we could do and where we could go to help those who weren't quite so fortunate. We had no idea and started exploring the possibilities. We thought it would be easy and thought we'd be spoilt for choice. But in actual fact, it was quite difficult to find somewhere to go. We rang and emailed many organisations, but we just didn't seem to fit the criteria. We were too old, we were too young, not too young. We wanted to go for too long, or we weren't going for long enough, or we didn't have the necessary skills. But then the coincidences started, in inverted commas. I was working at Desmond Anderson School, and the bursar asked me how things were going, and I said it was proving very difficult to find a project to get involved in. She suggested I talk to Jim, and I said that's a really good idea. I hadn't thought about doing that. Next time he's in, I'll have a word. I left the office, I walked down the corridor, and there was Jim standing there waiting to take assembly. Seeing him there at that time brought a smile to my face, because I knew God's timing was absolutely perfect. I asked if we could have a coffee afterwards, and when we were talking, I asked if he knew any projects that would fit the bill. He said, yes, I'm going there tomorrow. And it all started from there. And we were very aware of God's hand in the planning. We're not well travelled, and this was our first long journey, so we were nervous about it. But we were well supported by our family and friends and our church, and we knew this was the right thing for us. While we were there, we witnessed traumatic things, but it was inspiring to live with these wonderful, generous people.
The aim of the mission is to educate the children so that they can grow to be self-sufficient adults and provide for their families. Their motto is strive to excel, and the notice board outside the mission says, raising the leaders of tomorrow and nurturing the spirit of self-alliance in women. It was established 18 years ago by Life and Susanna Madsen, a Danish missionary couple. Life and Susanna were married, living in Denmark with their five children, when God told them they were to go to Africa to work with children. They were obedient, and after visiting the continent on a number of occasions, they narrowed it down to Kenya.
What we saw was so much more than that. It's nothing short of miraculous what God has achieved through the work of Life and Susanna and the Nakuru Mission. On the compound now is the church in the middle, three nursery classes and eight primary classes. And there are the classes there. The kitchen, a dressmaking school, an admin block, girls' home, boys' home, crisis centre. There are security guards on the gates and a team of staff, including teachers, social workers, house parents, administrators and cooks. The children receive an education from qualified teachers, but pastors, caretakers and social workers are all on hand to assist the children in rebuilding their self-esteem, self-confidence and belief in their own abilities. We talked to children who told us they wanted to be doctors, cabin crew, hairdressers, builders, engineers. It was such an inspiration to be with them all. All the staff are African and are employed by the Nakuru Mission. Talking to them, they're all committed to their work and believe God has placed them there to fulfill a particular role. They're so thankful to have a job so they can feed their families.
The mission is in the Langalanga district of Nakuru, which is about 90 miles north of Nairobi. It is the fourth largest town in Kenya, with a population of approximately 900,000. Children from surrounding areas seek refuge here, and many are forced to live on dump sites or on the streets because they have been abandoned by their families. Many children are deserted because their parents die of AIDS, malaria, TB, or other illnesses. The houses are varied. Some are built with mud, some with brick. All the homes we visited were very small, mostly one room with a curtain dividing it. The roads are very dusty and uneven, quite different to walk on, but some of the children walk for over an hour to school. The shops were interesting. Small, with limited stock. Here are a few examples. It was not unusual to see cows, goats and chickens walking along the road. The market was a very colourful place. It was very busy with narrow alleyways. It was quite claustrophobic, and you had to be quick on your toes to get out of the way of the men carrying heavy bags on their heads. They whistled and ran. If you were in the way, some kind soul would grab you out of the way to prevent you from being pushed onto the floor. The locals found it very amusing.
It's hard to describe the wonderful children that we met and worked with. Each has a story of hardship and rejection, but they look forward to the future with hope, and they have such love in their hearts. They smile, hold your hand, they want to chat and ask questions, and they're eager to please. There are 64 girls and 48 boys in the children's homes, but we'll talk about them later. When you enter the compound or the classes, it's easy to be fooled because children are smiling, clean and appear happy, but their stories are horrendous. I had the privilege of being included in staff meetings for the teachers. For the first part of the meeting, I could have been in any staff room in any school in England. They were talking about targets, behaviour, curriculum, all the usual stuff. Then we went on to the personal problems and family circumstances. It was hard to believe that these children had endured so much and yet were so full of life. They'd faced abandonment, extreme poverty, abuse of every kind imaginable. It's a testament to the work of Nakuru Mission and God's love in practice. Of all the children we met, only one had two parents, but they had abandoned her and were living in Nairobi, so she was in the home. Many are rescued from the streets and have been part of glue sniffing gangs, and they loved us, Mzungus. They were fascinated by hairy arms, fair hair, bingo wings, varicose veins. The things that are a problem in England are loved by these children, so it was a good place to be. They were very polite and always shook hands and said, "How are you?" Everywhere, even tiny children had learned that phrase, "How are you?" And we'd be walking down the road and we'd hear, "How are you?" And when we looked around, we could see a very small face on a mother's back or on a balcony or on the other side of the road. But they were very excited when they saw Mzungus. As well as the children in the homes, about 500 go to the school. And these children would not otherwise have any education. The hope and prayer is that education will break the cycle of poverty, and I pray that that is the case. But it seemed to us from the people that we met that even the educated people had a real struggle to make ends meet. We should see a picture of the wonderful teachers who work so hard. There they are in the staff room. They work so hard with the children. But they have such a hard life because their profession is not well paid in Kenya. At break time, they have tea and bread, and that's the first meal of their day, because they tend not to spend their money on their own food. The conditions they work in are very difficult, but we didn't hear one teacher raise his voice to the children. But the children are disciplined. One of the punishments was to dig holes in the compound using a stick. Another was carrying stones from one end of the compound to the other, and they hated it. It was such a public punishment. But they accepted they'd done something wrong, so they deserved to do it. There were 3 nursery classes and 8 primary classes. And the school is completed at the end of that with a state-controlled exam so that they can then go on to higher education with the same education as public schools. I worked in the school for 3 months and found it very challenging. And you children who are here, who are going back to school, I'd like you to imagine what your new class is going to be like. Bright, clean, lovely things on the walls. Lots of equipment to use, but we saw none of that. In the mornings, I assisted in the younger classes, where there were 50 children in each class, with the only resource being books. And they were shared one book between 3 or 4. No TA, no teaching assistant to help the teachers. So they really liked having me in the class because I could help with the marking. And there was a lot of it. Teaching was from the board with the children copying things into their books. There were 5 lessons each morning That makes 250 books to mark every morning. So you can imagine how popular I was. The children sat on wooden desks attached on wooden benches attached to wooden desks. Even though they were squashed and were sharing books with at least two others, they were very well behaved. In the afternoons, I taught in an out-of-school adult class, and these children have started their education later than normal, so they can't go into their own age class. Their ages range from 8 to 15, so though it was a smaller class, it presented its own challenges. An adult class is also offered for those who've never been to school. Here are some other photos, and you can see the conditions of the classes. But not all things in the Kuru school were the same as in the public schools, thankfully, as you can see here. Beating not allowed in New Life classes. For those of you who do work in schools, you'll be interested to see the school development plan and the targets that are set for the children. When we started planning the trip, I said I would do anything but teach. I've taught all my life, I'd do anything but that. But God had other plans, and that's what I found myself doing. The children were really good at showing off their talents to visitors. They welcomed us and a group of Danish visitors with a four-hour display of their skills. We were exhausted, but halfway through, an aerobics teacher arrived and got everybody up stretching, and that was something we didn't expect in Kenya. About 20 minutes' ride from the mission compound is the London area of Nakuru, where the dump site is. Nakuru Mission provides support for the families who live on the dump site. Nothing prepared us for what we saw and smelt when we visited, and the pictures will speak for themselves. But the people were very welcoming and smiled all the time. The grandmothers are taught to make bags and jewellery from the rubbish to sell to buy food for their families. Before we left, they entertained us by singing praise songs and getting us up dancing. One of the grandmothers invited us into her home, and we were amazed to see a three-piece suite, cupboard and table all retrieved from the dump site, and she was very proud of it. Just down the road from the dump site is a nursery school for the children who live there. They were adorable. They entertained us by singing and dancing with their teachers. There were 60 children in three classes. At the end of the morning, it broke our hearts to see these little children walking up the hill to their homes on the dump site. When they leave this nursery school, they go on to be sponsored in local primary schools. Nakuru Project has arranged a pig project for the people who live on the dump site to raise money and to provide food. It started small with just two piglets being looked after by two families, but now there are many pigs on the dump site and the families can either sell them or eat the meat.
The children also receive food as well as medicine and medical attention. There is a kitchen on the site run by Dan and Joseph. This is where I worked for 3 months. My main task was cutting cabbages and carrots by the hundreds. On special days, there were hundreds of tomatoes to cut. It is very basic, with cooking drums heated by charcoal and wood. These are used to cook porridge, which the children have in the mornings, and maize and beans, which they have at lunchtime. Very simple, but nutritious meals. This food is the only food a lot of the children will have to eat. Their families are very poor and food is scarce. The mission schools never close for the whole of the school holidays. They close a week later than the state schools and they open a week earlier because they know that some of the children will have no food during the holidays. It was heartbreaking. On some days during the hot season, there is no running water in the kitchen. One of my jobs was to fill barrows with water and carry them across the compound to the kitchen on a wheelbarrow. The meals are served in the church, which is used as a dining room during the week. I also became an expert at washing the tins, plates and mugs in cold water. I did have a lighter moment when I was invited into some of the classes of the older students to talk about English culture and our traditions. Together, we compared our two countries. As well as looking after the children on site, Nakura Mission organises a monthly distribution of food. Families, mostly women, come to the mission and are given a sack of rice, a sack of beans, and a sack of flour. This is enough to feed a family a small meal every day. I'm going to talk about the boys' home now. The 48 boys, aged 4 to 18, are housed in one large room. They sleep in three-tier bunks and have a trunk to keep their personal possessions in. Their shoes are stored on a shelf unit. There are no facilities and they have no privacy. Their restroom is very basic, with no comfortable sitting. But we did not hear one boy complain. They are so appreciative of all they have and thank God for their lives at Nakura Mission. We were very touched. We were really touched by them. And since we have been back, we have been fundraising for a new boys' home. The boys are very open about their past experiences and are encouraged to tell their stories so that they can thank God for all that he has done for them. It is impossible to be with them for a time without being deeply touched by them.
The girls' home was built in 2003 and was funded by a grant from the Danish government, and you can see it's very upmarket compared to the boys' home. 64 girls share the home in rooms with four bunks, so there are 8 girls in each room, and they each have a box under the bed for their possessions. They have their jobs and they complete them willingly.
There's the rota.
Without complaint. And I was really impressed when I was in the playroom and they were involved in their games. They were called to do their jobs. They went without complaining at all, did their job, came back and carried on with their games. There's a TV lounge and a kitchen where food is prepared and a playroom. While we were there, we opened the playroom every Saturday. And it was a real joy to play with the children or just cuddle them while they were watching television. The house parents are very good and caring and love the children, but they just don't have the time to give that sort of attention. Here are the boys with the bricks. Children the world over love building with their bricks. Here are some girls with their dolls. And on that occasion, they looked as though they were sitting in the clinic with their babies. In this next photo, we're listening to the iPod and we're listening to ABBA. And they were so excited to hear music coming from this little thing that I was holding in my hand. And at one point, we got up and had a party dancing when only one person could hear the music. So it was really interesting, but lovely. And here we are again. And it was so lovely to share those first experiences with them. Every week, a local hairdresser comes in to do the girls' hair. They loved it, but it took a very long time. And of course, they had to remove the old plaits first. What a job that was. You can see from my face, the concentration on my face, that this was no easy task. Social workers employed by Nakuru Mission are closely involved in their lives and offer mentor programs and rehabilitation and counselling. Activities are organised for them so that their lives are as rounded and normal as possible. And while we were there, we went on a camp with them. It was at a school just 15 minutes away, but it could have been on the other side of the world. They were so excited. It was great to see them relaxing on the grass, playing, swimming, and generally enjoying themselves. They'd never been swimming before, and the excitement was tangible even among the adults. And it amused me to see them running into the dormitories to change for swimming and coming out with more clothes on than they had when they went in. It gave us the opportunity to get an understanding of what it's like to live in a community environment. The lack of privacy, the noise as everyone settled to sleep or woke up, not being able to read until you're ready for sleep because the light goes off at a certain time, or the light on when you want to sleep. These are all luxuries that we take for granted. But one of the joys was seeing the older students looking after the younger children with such care and compassion. When I spoke to one of the boys who was home from university about this, he said he knew what it was like to be young with no family, so he wanted to care for those little ones.
A special education in design and sewing is offered for women so that they may become self-supporting. They make the most beautiful clothes, which are sold to visitors, as well as making all the uniforms for the girls. A bridal shop in the town centre is another way of raising funds. Wedding dresses are sent over from Denmark, are cleaned and repaired, and then sold or hired.
The Crisis Centre was established to support local women through counselling, education, short-term accommodation and healthcare. Young women and their children are rescued from abusive relationships or a life on the streets. It allows the women to meet with others who understand and can give support. The women are so open to the support they're given. And they're taught skills as well. They're taught to make bags and jewellery and taught life skills that will hold them in good stead when they leave the centre. For most of them, this will be the first time they've been shown real love and they're actually experiencing Jesus' love in a very practical way. We were exhausted every day while we were there, not only through the work we were doing, but by the emotional stress of being with people who have nothing. And the concept of nothing was really hard to get our heads round. We met lots of people and were welcomed and we were taken to their hearts. And we were constantly told we were a blessing to them. But we were blessed tenfold by being with them. We're going to tell you about two of these characters and our African family in a little bit of detail. Their stories will give an idea of the sorts of problems that are common. But they're by no means unique. They're just the ones we met. And the first one is Anne. After the school holidays in February, three girls did not return to the adult class that I was teaching in. I was distraught, but was told this was quite common. It took them a while to get back into routine. But after 2 days, teacher Margaret and head teacher Jane went to their homes to see where they were. It was very worrying. One had gone to work for an uncle in Nairobi, and the nature of the work was dubious because she was so young. And one had gone to live with her aunt, who was a known prostitute. The third girl, Margaret, could not be traced. One day, Roger and I were going to the mission earlier than usual, and as we walked along, we saw Margaret. She was with her mother and four younger siblings. They looked very tired, very dirty. None of them had shoes on. She hugged me and I asked her why she wasn't at school. But her English wasn't good and Mum couldn't speak English at all. So I asked at one of the kiosks whether there was anyone who could help us as the family was so distressed. Through the interpreter, we were told that they had no money at all and had not paid rent for 3 months, and so they'd been thrown on the streets. They had nowhere to go, no food, no home, no one to help them, and were desperate. They had been walking around the district for 3 days, hoping to find someone who could help them. They had had no food. We asked whether they would be allowed back in their home if the rent was paid, and they said yes. We asked Anne to take us to the home. We walked for a very, very long time. We were exhausted when we got there and were very conscious that they had been walking for 3 days. We couldn't imagine how they felt. We eventually arrived at a stinking alleyway and were shown into their home. It was a small room, no bigger than our kitchen at home. It had no furniture and no comforts at all, nothing. We had the most horrendous day when we met the landlord's representative to sort things out. We were so distressed, we rang Pastor Simon from Philadelphia Church and asked him to come and help us. We just couldn't manage without him. We were way out of our depth. By the end of the day, we'd paid the arrears, paid the 4 months' rent in advance, bought food for a week, charcoal to cook it on, nappies and milk for the babies, shoes for Anne and Margaret. We gave Pastor Simon enough money for Anne to start a small business of selling charcoal on the side of the road so she could make money to feed the family. Anne agreed to go to the crisis centre so that she could get support and advice on running her business. We felt we had done what we could for now, but knew that life would continue to be difficult for them. It was heartbreaking. The next week, we learned that Anne and the baby have AIDS.
We met Johnston at Life and Suzanne's home. He was a Nakura mission boy who had gone on to qualify as a chef. He was unable to get a permanent position because hotels and restaurants employed chefs on a casual basis, so there was no security for him. He was cooking at Life and Suzanne's because it was her birthday. After the meal, he played the guitar and sung a song he had written entitled "Thank You for My Life." It was a reflection of how his life had changed since he was rescued from the streets by Nakura Mission. It was so beautiful it made Jackie cry. He said God entered his life on that day and he has never looked back. The song was thanking God for all he had done for him. I spoke to him and asked how he wrote his songs, and asked whether he would like a CD of the songs written by Ian, who is the worship leader at our church. He said he doesn't have a CD player or guitar. He can only play when he is with someone who has one. Over and over during our stay, we realised how we take things for granted, and this was one of those occasions. Thankfully, we were able to give him a guitar. He then wrote a song thanking God for us and the guitar we had given him. He said he would spend all his time writing praise songs and continue to thank God for his life. As we left in May, we learned that he was to be made homeless because the landlord had doubled the rent with no warning. Despite having nothing, he and his friend were giving any money they had to the street children. He said he knew what it was like to live that life.
Before we went to Kenya, we had no idea what to expect. We asked Life and Susanna lots of questions, but got answers that didn't quite answer the questions we'd asked. In the end, we knew we just had to trust that God was going ahead of us and all would be well. With his help, we could cope with anything Kenya threw at us. But I can't pretend it wasn't a great relief when we arrived at the guest house and saw we had a proper loo. The house was palatial in comparison to others we went into. Our hosts were Nancy, Virginia, Winnie, and Sam. We learned that they had rented the house in faith. They trusted that God would send guests to them because any profits they make go towards looking after 12 girls who were living on the streets because they had been abandoned. Winnie had been one of those girls but now lives with Nancy to clean and cook. Every penny she is paid goes to her sister, who looks after her own daughter who was born as a result of rape, her brother, and two young cousins whose mother had disappeared. It was suspected that she had been murdered. They looked after us so well, and we now call them our African family. We were able to do what we did because they did what they did. Winnie sang and praised God all the time. When I heard her singing when she was cleaning the windows, I told her she was not normal. No one sang when they were cleaning windows. Her answer, "I love my work because God has given it to me." And it really brought me up short. The family are building a new home for the girls. They have got this far. That's a shell. And whenever they have spare money, they build a bit more. And they trust that God will provide for their need.
What you can do to help. We have to be honest and tell you that while we were there, we felt overwhelmed by the poverty and hardship that these children and the wonderful friends we made have to endure. We felt that whatever we did would not be enough because the need is so great and the government so corrupt. It is hard to see how it will change from within. We know that we have a God of miracles and we can clearly and we see clearly the miracles that has happened at Nakura Mission so far. We also know that we can make a difference. Our Lord said, "I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." So what can we do?
Obviously, finance is a big thing. But the most important thing is prayer. And prayer for finance is really necessary because Nakuru Mission gets no money at all, no support at all from the government. Everything they do is financed by Christians from all around the world. And it really is miraculous. The schooling takes place in primitive facilities, as you've seen, but the Kenyan government has started making demands about the condition of the school. So there's a real need to build a new school building. Plans have been made for a three-story building, and the government of the Faroe Islands have given them £40,000 approximately, but will only release it when that money has been matched. So that's a matter of urgent prayer. Also, prayer for the health of the staff, which has been challenging of late, for Susanna and Life and the work they're doing and for the energy that they need to do it, for the children and for the coming elections in March 2013. Something else you can do is sponsor a child, and it's very easy to do. And once you've given your details, you will be given a sponsor child. We can't explain how we felt when we saw the photo and got a life history of Moses and Mike, our sponsor children. Knowing that so little would change their lives so much was humbling and such a blessing to us. To sponsor a child in the home costs £32 a month. To sponsor a child who comes to school is £20 a month, and that money covers their food, education, uniform and health care, and you receive regular updates on their progress, and you have confidence that every penny of that sponsorship money is used for the children. There is no middleman. We have forms with us to set the ball rolling if that's something you'd like to do. You might want to sponsor a project, and the school is one of those, or the boys' home. You might like to give a monthly amount towards the work of the mission in general, and this can be any amount that you can afford. And you might like to support fundraising events that we're planning, and we'll let you know what's going on. During September, we're having soup and sandwich Saturdays in our house, and you're welcome to come to those. We'll leave some flyers where you can come along and enjoy soup, sandwiches and company with others, and then make a donation.
There are so many other things we could tell you about, but we don't want to fall into the pattern of a file services that we experience in Nakuru. They were wonderful with praise that raised the roof, but it was hard work in the heat and sitting on uncomfortable chairs. We did note that the pastors were served tea and refreshments as the service went on. Hope this doesn't give you any ideas, Jim. We must tell you about the football match. When the children and the staff played in Crawley Town kit, which had been given to us by the club before we went, they were thrilled and the whole school came out to watch. The match broke every FA rule and lasted for 4 hours on a dusty pitch with limitless substitutions so that anyone who wanted to play could do so. It happened to be on my birthday and it was the best present I could have had. We are going back in January for 1 month and look forward to meeting our friends again, including Dan and his family. Here are his two sons, David and Stefan, who were so thrilled with the Bibles we gave them from our church. Thank you so much for this opportunity to tell you about our trip and to praise God for all he is doing in Nakuru. We hope it gives a taste of the work of Nakuru Mission. Thank you, Jim, for inviting us, and a big thank you, too, for introducing us to this wonderful mission. If you want more information, you can visit the website. Thank you.